I'm Melissa Stock, and today I will be speaking with Vijay Rathore about cybersecurity during the pandemic and beyond. Vijay is the head of the Digital Forensics Group at Grant Thornton, involved in cybersecurity, incident response, data breach, and forensic investigations. Vijay, this unprecedented crisis has led to vast numbers of the workforce working from home and has led to increased cybersecurity issues. Could you tell us what has been the biggest problem during the pandemic?
So I was thinking about this, Melissa, and I was thinking, can you imagine that a little less than a year ago, the majority of us are sitting at a desk in an office with the infrastructural resilience and the predictable technology footprint that all presents to us, sitting in front of our computers and our monitors, working away under the gaze of the big brother 9 till 5. And yet, surprisingly, you know, just a few months later, and we're all working from the garden or the local coffee shop using a personal device, a mobile phone, house Wi-Fi, all of the factors that used to be considered the worst enemy of a well-regulated IT and cybersecurity footprint. So we've really just gone through, you know, some of the largest and the most dramatic changes in technological evolution that we've ever really seen. Indeed, if you ask organizations like Microsoft, we think that we're seeing something like a couple of years worth of technological advancement, all implemented on the hoof in about 3 months. So at the start of the year, we're all coming into this. Of course, many of us were shifting to a working from home pattern and a dramatic change in the way that we're existing these days. So in my world, of course, we like to think that some of the biggest problems also allow us to think about some of the biggest opportunities. And so for many organizations, and indeed much like myself, our own organization, we've been able to measure and dramatically improve productivity while we've had this shift in working practices. So ironically, we found that the time that we've saved in travel by hosting more efficient meetings, by having greater access to our peers, both inside and outside of the business, we've really helped steer our business towards greater productivity and effectiveness in the application of our efforts. And indeed, we've realized greater value from that. You will see that many organizations are tracking something like a one-third increase in productivity as a result of moving away from sitting in front of desks, which is a dramatic change. And so again, in my view, actually what we're looking at is the shift in environment, the shift from a work from desk into a work from home environment has also created opportunities for us. These technologies have really allowed us to work in better ways, and we're thinking about how they're being used, how we're deploying them, but at the same time, they also create challenges. Think about all of the things that we've now taken for granted. Indeed, Microsoft Office, Office 365, Microsoft Teams, Zoom, whiteboarding technologies, things that used to be slightly on the periphery, but now are considered absolutely de rigueur in the way that we're working remotely. And indeed, VPNs and all of the lingo that goes with that, all of the jargon. Unfortunately, in my world, every single new technology creates a broadened attack surface, being that code for every opportunistic attack, that opportunistic environment that the bad guys can try to circumvent. And that all creates potential new risks, new opportunities for the bad guys to try and break in. And so all of that is creating new problems for us at the same time as we're creating new opportunities and increased productivity. So it's challenging. We're creating risks while we're creating new opportunities. But of course, that's the world of security and cyber infrastructure.
Is the problems based on the volume of people that are now working from home? Is it a volume-based problem, or are there new problems?
Typically, if you go through, as a large organization, if you were thinking about shifting away from working in the office to implement something like Office 365, which a couple of years ago, many organizations were thinking about it, but they were going through technological due diligence. It's kind of trite that in a corporate, you never use a version one product. You will always wait for a version two or wait for it to be for somebody else to bug test it and go through all the issues there. And yet you suddenly had organizations that were having to throw everything into the cloud, suddenly deploy VPNs and security infrastructure and virus killers and all of these things, but also do it on scale. So Grant Thornton shifted something like 3,000 users from sitting inside a large building in London or around the country. And suddenly we had something like 3,000 individuals working remotely almost the next day. You think about all of these, the truncated user acceptance testing, and can I still access all of the remote access technologies that I used to? I've got some old clunky infrastructure that's on a virtual machine that requires me to log in 3 times. Suddenly all of that is now being deployed in a very different way en masse. And so you have both the breadth of technologies that we're now needing to think about, and also the volume, so the number of employees that are potentially working from new places. And again, in my world, that all creates a broadened attack surface. We'll come back to this, but ironically, I think that it's commonly said that our greatest attack surface is you and I, where you've got the hardware, which we all understand, software, the Microsoft, the Office 365, tangible, but the webware, the you and I, the human interface, is unfortunately one of the most unpredictable parts. And so we've seen that manifest in things like an increase in cyber scams, opportunistic individuals and corporations that will send us an email and say, please click here and send £100,000 to this bank account instead of the old one. Cyber scams we've seen as an increase while we're receiving emails from new places, working in new environments, having different approval protocols and corporate governance. Increase in cyber attack mechanisms, new technologies resulting in new ways to break into them. And of course, we're also seeing weaknesses in corporate governance and fraudulent activity inside. So both malicious problems or malicious insiders on the inside of the organization, and then also the bad guys on the outside, all of that creating new issues that we have to deal with.
I mean, this pandemic has shifted our perspectives on how and where we work, as you say. I mean, it's been extraordinary change for us all. And large organizations such as Microsoft and Twitter have announced that they will continue to allow employees to work from home after the pandemic. Do you think cybersecurity problems will fall over time now that this pattern of working has been established and companies are prepared for it? Or do you think it's just going to be an ongoing battle?
I feel in a way it would be great to have a better answer, but in the very short form, no. I don't think that we're actually going to see a net decrease. That sounds very sad socially and culturally, but from my perspective, I feel that we have to be conscious about what we're talking about from the perspective of the adversary here. So for background, for those that might find this relevant, I used to be a hacker myself, and in my spare time, I used to be a lawyer, or of course, the other way around. My day job was sitting as a barrister and a solicitor. But then when I went home, I had a great fascination and passion for the world of hacking. At the time, it was predominantly about intellectual curiosity. What can I make the technology do for me? How can I stretch the envelope? What would happen if I pressed this button instead of that button? Unfortunately, what we've seen over the last decade dramatically is the commercialization of these efforts. So how can I turn this into money? How can I steal funds from your organization? Effectively, in my view, and if I was to ask you, Melissa, as a lawyer, do you think we're ever going to be able to legislate for aberrant human and sociological behavior? You know, I take a somewhat glasses half empty view that we're never going to be able to get rid of all criminal or evil behavior, if we can use that sociological expression. And so in the same way, we're never going to be able to remove the commercial motivations to attack somebody and try to blackmail them, ransom them, or take money out of their business and put it into my pocket, which is a shame. And we all look forward to a Star Trek type world in the future. But for the time being, I feel that there will always be this cultural undercurrent of the aberrant behavior where people are going to try and take the opportunistic opportunity to break into your environment and use what you have for their own commercial gain. So in the short term, I think you will always see a net increase in cyber attack. And I don't think it will ever all disappear. But on the other hand, to think about your question, we are maturing. So we've moved beyond that on the hoof implementation of things reactively. And we are now starting to mature, and we're seeing that we're taking more time to consider the impact of the technologies we're putting into place following the pandemic. And as a result of that, we are decreasing the risk that we're now operating in. We're strengthening that security envelope. We're getting our people better educated into the new normal. And so as a result, we are seeing a commensurate decrease in perhaps some of the easier opportunistic attack surfaces we created. But unfortunately, through this year, we've actually seen a net increase. Again, something like a third year-on-year increase in cyber attacks compared to last year.
One case that featured this year in the Supreme Court was that of W.M. Morrison's supermarket against various claimants, in which the court considered vicarious liability for an intentional data breach caused by an employee. How prevalent are internal breaches in organisations as opposed to external threat actors?
When we think about where our attacks come from, a large number of them are opportunistic, and we will see that the bad guys will take very, very sophisticated efforts to break into an organisation. So we're working on a number of cases right now where an organization that was unfortunately dealing with official state secrets had a very sophisticated attacker who'd broken in through part of their virtual machine infrastructure using the Citrix environment, using what's called a zero-day attack, something that's never been seen before, can't be protected against because nobody's ever effectively inoculated against the circumstances we've seen. So a zero-day vulnerability in this attack, in this environment, was identified. The bad guys jumped on it, took the opportunity to break into our client's environment, which was not a particularly well-known or visible or commonly accessible type of technology. And yet the bad guys took the opportunity to break into that IT estate, and were able to steal information, ransomware of the organisation and steal a couple of million pounds. And so this all came about through a very, very sophisticated mechanism. That, in my world, is very, very limited. Unfortunately, don't believe everything that Hollywood will tell you, and it's not sort of like the Matrix. Unfortunately for us, something like two-thirds of all of the cyber attacks that we deal with are caused by insiders. Effectively, again, as I identified, the wetware, unfortunately, malicious insiders. So commonly, sometimes you've got those individuals who want to steal something or want to use it for competitive advantage, give it to a friend who works for their opposing business. You will commonly have things like a team defection where they're planning to move over to another organization and will steal confidential information or pricing models and information like that. And then you will also have, unfortunately, the accidental insider. So somebody who accidentally uses CC instead of the BCC, or unfortunately misconfigures a system, or unfortunately writes their password on a post-it note in the old days when we used to have desks in the office. And all of those vulnerabilities, unfortunately, can turn into a problem. And so Morrison's was an interesting one in that actually where in the original factual scenario, you had an employee and effectively vicarious liability for his potential wrongdoing. I felt that the original judgment, at the very least in the earlier court, was very problematic for organizations because it required us to really police behaviors of wanton employees through that vicarious liability. This was potentially very challenging, and Melissa, you'll have to remind me, but I felt that it was also accompanied almost by a kind of judicial shrug of the shoulders saying, well, it doesn't really matter because the corporate can insure against the weaknesses.
Yes, I mean, exactly. It was... In the Court of Appeal was that, well, they have the insurance, so, you know, what's the problem? But, you know, as you say, the problem is that how can you, as an employer, police your, you shouldn't need to police your employees. And how would you know when you have a disgruntled employee who's going to go out of their way to do something that you just cannot predict? So, you know, that would be incredibly problematic. So I think the Supreme Court rectified that position. I mean, that was part of what potentially could have been a class action suit. Is that something that organisations are becoming increasingly concerned about? I mean, there are a number now of representative actions coming through the UK courts.
Absolutely, Melissa, yes. And if you think about the matters related to emotional distress as a result of perhaps a GDPR failure or a data breach, the world's our oyster if you're the wrong slash right kind of lawyer who's engaged in those types of actions. But from my perspective, when it comes to addressing data governance and cyber governance, and indeed corporate governance as well, when we're talking about those things like the malicious insider who's trying to get access to a pricing model and steal that and give that to somebody else. Or indeed, if you have the rogue banker who's going to be able to trade away billions of dollars worth of funds by finding ways to work around the ethical and internal mechanisms and controlled environment. Corporate governance, internal governance, data hygiene, all of these are absolute watchwords for the corporate. And the stick and the carrot of regulatory and litigation challenge is helpful to have at the back of your mind, but at the same time, something that is commonly forgotten, and it's not that just that I commonly work for large corporates, but we often forget that Morrison's was a victim here. And if we think about the recent ICO findings, British Airways and Marriott were victims, and they weren't just the boogeyman corporate spectra. They were organizations that effectively had a cyber attack committed on them. And of course, you know, GDPR and data governance and so the FCA and related hygiene will require them to put in place the appropriate technological and systemic safeguards around data and data hygiene. But at the same time, these organizations can try and put in place almost every protection that's possible. But as I described earlier, sometimes the bad guys are just incredibly ingenious and they will find a way to work around it. And you will have a zero-day attack, which will result in significant failures and weaknesses. And of course, we then have a bit of a cat and mouse game. What is proportionate? What is the regulatory expectation? Because in my world, you could spend an infinite amount of money on cybersecurity and still not have perfect cybersecurity. Proportionality becomes relevant here. And unfortunately, I think the class actions can sometimes encourage the wrong/right types of behaviours. But at the same time, it is critical that you recognise that processing data is a luxury and not a right. And thus, you do have an expectation to look after it carefully.
In terms of internal threat actors and how organisations deal with that, you and I have spoken in the past about using predictive behavioural analytics. Is that something that organisations are looking more to use?
Absolutely, Melissa. Yeah, we're seeing that cat and mouse game again, in that we are seeing incredible ingenuity by the bad guys here. And forgive me for the political incorrectness there, but you know, let's assume that most criminals are effectively criminal, i.e. identifiable as bad, and certainly not all hackers are guys. But let's assume that the criminal fraternity there, or brotherhood or sisterhood or whatever it may well be, are interested in trying to do things to your organization. That is challenging. And we need to try and work around that. But it is difficult to create that perfect security environment. It is difficult to create a perfect mechanism that will prevent any type of criminality there. And we're going to have challenges around this, but we constantly have that cat and mouse game where the bad guys are finding ways to break into a zero day. They're finding ways to, indeed, you may have read a couple of months ago, the source code for one of the versions of Windows was hacked and stolen. This creates decades worth of opportunities for the bad guys to try and find a mechanism to create a sophisticated flaw that they can then take advantage of. And so they do their homework. They work extremely hard, and it isn't all opportunistic ransomware. But some of it is very sophisticated, and indeed the best hackers are the ones that you never catch. Sorry, I have a hobby of lockpicking, and I find it a great passion that you get a lock. You try to hack away at it with the lockpicks and use the technology and use the art and the skill that goes into that. And once you have some mastery of the lock, you suddenly realize that all of the locks on the high street, when I walk down the road and I can see all of the Christmas trees with the Xbox sitting underneath the tree, the thing that is stopping me from breaking into that house is not the lock on the door, but it's cultural hygiene, it's social habits, but it's not the physical lock that's stopping me breaking in. So effectively, you will see that the technology, the cat and mouse game of the use of artificial intelligence by the bad guys, is being rebutted by the use of artificial intelligence by the good guys. But unfortunately, they will find a way to level up their game even again. And so, yes, we are seeing better and increased use of behavioral anomaly detection systems, network packet analysis systems. But unfortunately, the bad guys are commonly a step ahead of us because they've got commercial motivation.
I read somewhere that organizations have a lot of redundant data, or data that they're holding they just don't actually need. And I was thinking the other day that, you know, perhaps one answer is we spend a lot of time thinking about how to stop people coming and taking the data, but actually maybe one other answer is just not to have this data, or to find ways to reduce it to the point where you're then only having to worry about the security of a much smaller amount of data. Is that a solution, or is that, does that not really make much difference?
In my world, from experience, we had a client who ran a very popular music website, which many of us will use on a daily basis. And when they had something that looked like a cybersecurity incident, a question that you will inevitably ask them is, you have, let's say, 20 million active users, or yeah, even if that was 20,000, or even if it was 20 active users, why in those circumstances are you holding a record of 60 million now redundant accounts? You are holding a credit card number that is no longer being used by an active account holder, but you are still holding the credit card number. You are still holding their email address, their home address, and yet only 20 million of those are necessary for your business. And thus the question that we commonly manifest is, prune your data set. Eliminate all of the dead wood that is not necessary for operation of your business because of the obligation that goes the other way. If the bad guy steals 80 million records, they don't care if there's 60 million that are active and 20 million that are inactive. For them, it's all just great credit card information that they can try to jeopardize. It's great phishing information that they can try to use. And the ICO, at least in the UK, and if we look at international regulators, when you can attract a fine per record, you will certainly be kicking yourself and saying, why did I hold 60 million inactive, legally redundant records, and now potentially attract a fine that is, what, geometrically greater as a result of that redundant data? So certainly when we do this type of exercise with our clients, we're going through and thinking about corporate hygiene, data governance hygiene, prune away, encrypt, anonymize, pseudo-anonymize, and do everything possible to try to potentially reduce this inevitable cyber attack, acknowledging that cyber attacks are absolutely inevitable.
Ransomware attacks have also increased this year, and there is some debate about whether or not a company should pay ransoms to release the data. Is this something that companies now choose to do when they're faced with the stark choice of the cost of reinstating the data by other means, you know, which can take time and disrupt the business and cost the business, or simply paying the ransom and getting the data back quickly?
Through this year, we have seen, again, a significant measurable double-digit increase in the number of ransomware attacks that have been committed both in the UK and globally. And unfortunately, with that, we've also seen a commensurate increase in effectively the fine, the ransom that the bad guys have been looking for. And their sophistication as well is increasing in the sense that they will look at your organization and say, well, we can see that you've got cyber insurance. The fact that you are unlikely to be paying the fine yourself or the ransom yourself means that it's going to go from a notional £10,000 or a couple of bitcoins to 300,000, 3 million effectively. What is the appetite that the insurer can now bear? And so the sophistication of the request by the bad guys is becoming more considered. And indeed, we have expertise in ransomware negotiations. And so with some of these people that we interact with, they can be very, very polite. They are very polite, and they'll say, it's unfortunate that I've had to ransomware you. We do apologize, recognize this is just business. And if you want to get your data back, these are the undertakings we can give. Send us a couple of files and we can prove life. We can prove that we can decrypt your data. We commit to deleting your data when we paid the money. Aren't we all great corporate citizens, notwithstanding that they've got a gun to your head? And so we've been able to say our client is a charity. Okay, brilliant. Well, we will actually reduce the fine by 50%. There is a dialogue there to be had. But unfortunately, the questions we need to think about are very commercial, in the sense that you'll be thinking about things like the risk of business interruption versus all of the potential knock-on impacts by paying a ransom and showing that you are the type of person that is subject to ransoms. So do you potentially show that you've got a victim mentality and that you don't mind being ransomed this year and that's potentially three times again for the remainder of the year and next year for twice as much money? Effectively, do you demonstrate that you're putting a target on your own head? And similar behaviors in the sense that as you pay the ransom, you need to be thinking about, do you get the same data back? How do you know that you're not leaving back tools in your system? These are all considerations for us when it comes to actually decrypting the data once we have the ability to do that. But even before that, as a business and as a suite of executives, you're going to be thinking about business interruption, reputational harm, insurable losses, third-party liabilities, all of the claims that can come from that, and of course regulatory impacts if we need to deal with the ICO for loss of access to data as much as loss of the actual data itself. So all of those impacts, again, all measured up against, should I pay the 10,000, 30,000, 300,000, 3 million? And so again, when we do a lot of executive training, we will be asking that question to the business and saying, what is your appetite to bear risk? Do you have cyber insurance against this? What is their behavior and their tolerance for paying ransoms? But unfortunately, we are seeing more organizations paying these ransoms because they recognize that effectively it just means that they can get back to business as usual significantly quicker than some of the alternatives. We're seeing that organizations, you may have seen at the start of October, OFAC, effectively the SEC was talking about the OFAC requirements, so making sure that you are not paying known criminals or not funding known criminal behaviors and OFAC regulated organizations. And so we're going through the process of attestation, making sure that when we pay a criminal, that they're not very bad criminals, they're just reasonable criminals. So it's becoming a more convoluted world, but unfortunately the realities of it, we're seeing more of it.
If you were to make one prediction for the year ahead, what would it be?
The direction of travel is more devices, more mobile phones, more USB sticks, more online accounts, more virtual machines, more working from home, more working from the coffee shop. Unfortunately, in my view, there is going to be an unstoppable trend in the increase of opportunistic cyber attacks. But the good thing is the good guys are constantly working to try to limit that. So harden yourself, secure yourself, think about a proportionate spend. But unfortunately, the prediction is cyber attacks are not going away. So continue to try to shore yourself up against it.
Thank you very much for speaking with me today, Vijay. And I hope the listeners found that insightful.
Absolutely. Very best wishes to everyone.